welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Today's topic is the semiconductor supply chain and the real cause of semiconductor shortages. With me is my podcast partner, Mike Gianfagna. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Dan.
Our guest today is 50-year semiconductor veteran, founder, and CEO of Future Horizons, Malcolm Penn. Good morning, Malcolm, and welcome to our podcast.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Dan. Thanks for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
Great. Malcolm, I attended your biannual industry forecast seminar yesterday. Very well done. So what's the backstory here? When did you get that started? And, you know, what has your experience been thus far?
Yeah, well, thanks. I'm glad you could attend. I joined the semiconductor industry, as you said, just over 50 years ago in the very late 1960s, and more by accident than by career choice, because back then semiconductors were still a relatively new industry. But I was attracted to it by the fact that it was very young, very dynamic, and it was really growing so fast and pretty disorganized as well back then. So there was a lot of opportunity to do pretty much whatever you wanted to do. We were still making it up as we went along. So that was my first introduction to semiconductors, and the sheer excitement of it, the fact it was constantly changing and new challenges all the time, was what suited my kind of personality and my background. So I did a lot of time in the industry working for ITT Semiconductors, who had two factories in the US, as well as one in Germany and one in the UK. And I spent time in all of those locations there, which again gave me a very broad perspective. And ITT wasn't exactly one of the most forefront runners in the industry, but they had some good things about them, which kind of set the stage for a lot of the things we do today in some ways. And they no longer exist, but it was a good time to cut your teeth. Cutting a long story short, I was eventually joined DataQuest to set up their European operations to do the market research for them. They were obviously very successful in the US, but had a limited presence in Europe. I was a client of theirs, and they asked me if I wouldn't mind setting up their European operation. And you know, at first I hesitated, but then I thought this is a good chance. And I set up that operation and ran it for 10 years. Before I decided to spin out and start Future Horizons. And the big difference I wanted to do with Future Horizons was not just simply concentrate on gathering numbers and data, but looking much more about what do the numbers mean? Because one number can mean lots of different things to different people. You can say prices are going up, which is great news for the seller, but bad news for the buyer. So I wanted to kind of draw attention to what does the data actually mean and put a more analytical perspective on it. And that's what I wanted to do in Future Horizons. DataQuest wasn't so interested in that aspect of it. So I set up on my own based on the fact that I'd had 10 years as the head of Europe. And so I knew everybody. So it gave me a head start in terms of developing the business here. And pretty much from day one, we decided to host these industry update events where we wanted to just stick our head up above the parapet and nail our colors to the mast to say, here's what the industry is looking like right now, and here's what we think it's going to do. And from day one, we said we would always start off the seminar by going back, by telling people, here's what we said the last meeting we had, here's what happened, what went wrong, what went right, where did we make mistakes, where did we get it on the ball? And we've been doing that ever since. So 33 years now with these events. Yesterday was our 33rd year in this section. And it's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, they're very, very useful. Great content. Definitely time well spent. So I highly recommend it to everybody out there. So, Malcolm, let's talk about, you know, what's really on the front pages today. You know, the current shortages have drawn everyone's attention to the vulnerabilities in the supply chain, in particular, the supplier concentration in Korea and Taiwan. How do you see the current trend to bringing manufacturing back home?
Good question. I mean, this has been a gradual process, I think, in terms of industry consolidation, much fewer suppliers now, coupled with the tendency for companies, traditional IDM companies, wanting to become and adopt a fabless semiconductor model and outsource their production to a foundry. So those two forces together have automatically increased the concentration and reduced the supplier choice. And it's got to the point now whereby certainly at the leading edge, and the leading edge covers quite a broad spectrum nowadays, you're finding that there's really only a very small number of people who can actually make these devices. And at the very leading edge, it really boils down to TSMC and with a little bit from Samsung on kind of special areas. So we've had this trend here, and of course the shortages suddenly made everybody realize that they thought they were buying from company A, but in reality they were actually buying from a foundry over whom they had no control over, no supply agreement with, no contract with. And so the whole supply chain had become extremely fragile and very sort of delicate in terms of the security of supply aspects of that there. So the natural tendency for that to say is, okay, let's bring manufacturing back home. But that's a lot easier said than done, not only because the time that it takes to actually do that and to rebuild that expertise. We did that in Europe in the 1980s, and it took 6 years before you even made an impression on making that technology come back to the home shores. But I think also there's a mindset issue here. Because that mindset that persuaded the IDMs to go fabless, to outsource their manufacturing, it's that mindset that really is going to have to change. They've now got to fall back in love with manufacturing. That means they've got to fall back in love with building expensive factories, and that will have an impact on their P&L, on their profitability, on their investors, on the whole gambit of people there, which at the moment they don't have to deal with because they're fabless, essentially.
Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting because it's become a political issue as well. And, you know, anytime you mix politics into, you know, technology and industry, things don't always work out the way we had hoped. But, you know, I think one of the issues is cost because, you know, TSMC can manufacture these wafers for, you know, 30% less than other companies if they do it in Taiwan. If you spread that out to the US or other areas, it's going to be more expensive. And, you know, cost, it just seems to be very important for semiconductors. It always has been. And, you know, I'm just wondering if once the shortage issue is resolved, and it's going to be resolved, you know, and it's a demand side issue, in my opinion, you know, which is huge demand, and COVID is causing us a lot of problems in the supply chain. But, you know, once this shortage is over, you know, are people going to forget about this, you know, bringing manufacturing back home?
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. And I think you made a good point in the beginning there when you said it's a political issue. It really is. I mean, all of the drive is coming from politicians. It's not coming from industry itself. And at the end of the day, it's the markets that determine whether things are going to be successful or not nationalism or subsidies or anything like that. And the markets, I think, will not vote for their feet once the market turns and supply is no longer an issue. I won't be surprised, but I think some people will be surprised how quickly all this will be forgotten. And politicians have incredibly short memories. I mean, all they care about is jumping on to the next big thing. But eventually, I think we're going to see this kind of ratchet down a little bit. The rhetoric will ratchet down.
Yeah. Once a politician sees something else that's shiny, they'll be off in a different direction.
Exactly.
So, at your recent industry update event, you drew an example of chip suppliers beating up the wafer guys, you know, TSMC, Samsung, on price, which is standard semiconductor industry. Can you elaborate on what you were driving at?
I think it goes one level down below that, Dan, actually, in terms of the actual silicon blank suppliers as well. I mean, they get beaten over the head to reduce the price of those wafers. And the net result is that now they're making such a poor return on their investment. We haven't seen any greenfield investments in wafer production for a long time now. And so the wafer shortage is probably even more severe than the device shortage. I know the two are linked together. But there is no slack in the system there whatsoever. So there's one real danger that you're going to see this new capacity coming on stream, but no wafers to put in there because there is a supply shortage there. And a couple of, well, about 10 years ago, I picked up a slide which said, you know, you pay maybe $100 for a wafer, and you beat the guy down to give it to you for $90, $85, and so on. Supposing you paid him $110 for that wafer, $150 even. It really won't make any difference by the time you've turned that into a processed wafer and turned that $100 into $2,000, $5,000, maybe even $15,000. You add $50 to $15,000, you come up with $15,050. It makes little difference at the die level. Even if it was only a $5,000 wafer, it's still small change in the absolute term as to what that cost increase is. And yet you would make the wafer manufacturers so much more profitable that you wouldn't have this shortage that you see there now. So I think it is this beating down the supply chain, everybody bashing each other over the head, trying to get the lowest price, whereas that might not be the best value. The best value might be to pay a slightly higher price for the chip, but to know you can get security of supply, whether it's geographical wise, political wise, or whatever. But just to have that security in the supply chain, that robustness in the supply chain, which clearly isn't there.
So Malcolm, in your presentation yesterday, you mentioned the industry's apparent fixation with making the quarterly number, which is a familiar phrase. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? What exactly do you mean by that, and what's the implications?
Well, I mean, it's just the question that every quarter, everybody wants to ship everything in sight just to maximize their revenue number to make their P&L look good, which is commendable, is an inherent part of capitalism, and that's good. But it does not disrupt the supply chain in terms of the operations facility. And I've been there. I mean, I used to run memory tests, and I used to walk into my room the very next day after the quarter had closed, and it would be just a mess, a disaster zone, and with nothing to do for the first week while you were starting to build up that supply chain or other. And it reflects in the numbers. You can look at the WST numbers, and you'll see that every first month of the quarter, the units go up and the ASP goes down. And the same thing happens in reverse. In the third month of the quarter, the ASP goes up and the units go down. And you know that's because they're struggling to rebalance the line. And the easiest way to rebalance the line is to move forward all of the easy to make parts, which tend to be high volume, but low ASP. And the numbers just show it. So I think, you know, all of these things which are done with the right intentions, there's nothing that you should look forward to more than a very boring factory. Factories should be boring. They shouldn't be a hive of activity and disaster, people running around trying to rebalance the line. It's a continuum, and it should be a continuum. And I think that's one of the reasons why we get ourselves into problem. We're focusing on maybe the wrong issues when you look at it from an operations and a manufacturing perspective, which in turn, I think, reflects into the bottom line overall, because the smoother that ship runs, the better profitability it's going to have.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's the needs of the customer versus the needs of Wall Street. They're not necessarily aligned, and it can cause dysfunction. So that's a very good perspective. You know, speaking of perspective, you've been in the industry a long time. We talked about that at the beginning, but you're based in Europe. How do you think this affects your views and perception of the industry, kind of watching Silicon Valley from afar, if you will?
Yes, I mean, semiconductors in Europe aren't usually two words you use in the same sentence. And to some extent, I suppose, it has been a disadvantage because you're not where the action is. I mean, when I first started, the action was clearly in Silicon Valley. And whenever I used to visit there as often as I could, you used to step off the plane and just feel that energy and look over the hills down at all of the factories there that were just names, beautiful names back in that day. But what it has done for me is it's given me a much broader perspective overall, because I've been able to kind of look at both sides of the story in terms of I've seen what's happening in Europe. I've seen some of the mistakes that have been made. I've seen the way that the system works against the European companies, whether it's a startup or whether it's a big organization. You can see some of the things they've also managed to do right. I mean, a lot of the things they have managed to do right relate to the fact that they have a lot of collaborative R&D in particular programs going on. And those have been super efficient in terms of 1+1 really does equal maybe not quite 2, but certainly 1.8 or 1.9. And it's enabled European companies to really do a lot more for the limited resources that they have by collaborating on non-competitive research. That's something which the rest of the world really hasn't got their head around and picked up on. So I think it's given me a much broader perspective on things. And I always like to pick up on, I learn from what people do well, and I also learn from what people do badly. So I think, you know, you can pick up on these things here, and it does give you a slightly broader view on life than you maybe you would get if you were just in one ecosystem.
Yeah, it's a good point. I guess another way to say that is if you're too close to the problem, you can't see the big picture, and you have an advantage there, I would say, of not being too close to any one ecosystem where it's hyperactive. You don't really see the big picture, but you can from your perspective. It's a good point.
Yeah, and I've had the advantage of actually being able to travel into many of them, so that's been a huge benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Mike and I are in Silicon Valley, and so we see that, and I spend a lot of time in Asia, so I see that as well, but I really don't see Europe too well, so that's a great perspective. Just one final question, some final thoughts, Malcolm. You know, this has been a wild experience over the last year and a half. I mean, this really is a black swan event, they call it. You know, COVID has just really messed with all supply chains, not just the semiconductor supply chain. It's nice that we're getting a lot of attention, but realistically, the whole supply chain has been disrupted. So, you know, to net this out, are you hopeful changes will now finally happen to prevent this type of event in the future? Because this isn't the first time, right? I mean, this has happened multiple times over the years that I've been in the industry. You know, are we going to be able to make some changes here?
Well, no, it's not the first time. In fact, when the next downturn comes, it will be the 14th. And I've actually lived through all of them. I mean, I joined the industry just as it went into the first downturn. And that gave me a different perspective on life, because I thought, I've just joined this industry and now it looks like I'm going to be out of a job. So that kind of raised my antenna a little bit about what's happening in the industry. Are things going to change? I'd like to say yes. And on the one hand, I really would like to see that it is going to change. But I think the biggest missing piece to be the catalyst to that change is the change of mindset that we do need in the financial community and the way that the business runs itself. Really sort of worshipping the gods of Wall Street and the like, and that quarterly P&L and the numbers and stuff like that. But what I think might actually help to make it change is this movement towards the OEM direct business model, where big corporations generating lots of money on revenues with services, the Apples, the Amazons, the Facebooks of this world, they're now starting to build their own really complex SoC chips. And I think that they would have a much different view on the supply chain than perhaps more traditional companies might have. So I'm hoping that they can take a longer term perspective, because they make so much money. They generate on average $450 per square centimeter of silicon processed. The chip industry gets 9. So you can see the value that they're creating. And if only they used a little bit of that $450 just to feed back down to the supply chain to help make it more robust, to help build in these checks and balances, to help build in these inventory points, this security in the supply chain, then the whole industry would benefit tremendously.
You know, I guess what you're talking about is the systems companies, you know, Apple and those guys, and now Google and Amazon making their own chips. And you know, but it just reminds me, when I first got into the industry, computer companies were the semiconductor companies, right? So I worked for computer companies that had their own fabs and they were making their own chips. And, you know, we've kind of come full circle that the system guys are making their own chips again. And yeah, there's huge amounts of profit. So I think there is room to improve here. And I think that's one of the reasons, by the way, why TSMC is so successful now, because they have Apple as a partner, and they really have changed the way foundries develop semiconductor processes. So there's been a lot of changes, but you know, in the supply chain, maybe not so much. So hopefully we do have room for improvement here. We can learn from this black swan event. So Mike, final thoughts?
Yeah, I, you know, Malcolm, I really appreciate your perspective here. the history matters and the cycles matter and the patterns matter. And your broad perspective on how this industry has evolved and grown, I think, is a really important piece of knowledge to help us make it better going forward. You know, we can focus on the most recent cycle and make a lot of bad decisions, but you take a bigger picture view of what's actually been happening over the years, you can really figure out how to optimize an improvement. And I agree with you. I'm hopeful that these large new system customers who are really becoming the main focus and the main driver for semiconductors will take a little different perspective on the supply chain and the importance of it and the nurturing of it. So we'll see. But I really appreciate your perspective. It's been very enlightening.
Well, thanks very much for inviting me. I mean, I think for all of we concentrate on the changes in Moore's Law and technology and stuff like that. But fundamentally, the industry has some remarkably consistent trends and standards built into it. And it's those that we spend a lot of time watching. And it's those that I think are help you become a lot more confident about what's going to happen in the future. And yeah, I share your thoughts. I really, really hope change does happen because it's overdue and we can do a lot better than we currently are.
Great conversation. Thank you, Malcolm. Thank you, Mike. And thank you to all of our listeners. We'll speak with you again next week. That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.